Old Smoky.
Remember that thing?
Yeah.
On top of Old Smoky, huh?
Hi, wrestling fans. From Greenville, South Carolina's Memorial Auditorium, welcome to another action-packed, exciting hour of Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Wrestling the way it used to be and the way you like it.
Hey out there, and welcome to another episode of On Top of Old Smoky, the podcast that covers Smoky Mountain Wrestling from its humble beginnings to its eventual demise. I am your good friend, Lukey, and I am here with my co-host, the Sultan of Storytelling, Mr. Alex Khalil. How you doing, buddy?
Bit of a dramatic pause on that intro there.
I wanted to let people breathe it in a little bit.
Building some tension.
Okay.
Luke, I gotta be honest with you. I was not excited to come back to Smoky Mountain Wrestling this week. I wasn't necessarily dreading it, but I did not have the time to put aside to sit down and watch this show for a long, long time. Until this very morning, in fact. So I woke up at 6:15 in the morning. Yes, this was a early morning viewing of Smoky Mountain Wrestling. And, you know, they say, like, the best part of waking up is Forgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is not watching, you know, an hour of Smoky Mountain Wrestling, because it's not a exciting show to really get you jazzed up and excited to go for the rest of the day.
Like, and I'll be honest with you, I also started the morning, and it's a beautiful day here.
Yeah.
And the scenic mountain views of the show... I don't know, man. I felt like I was listening to John Denver. It was actually an upgrade from last week. I'm a much improved.
I will say this was a far more superior program than last week. This should have been the opening show.
I agree with that. Yes.
So, well, you know, it went from pretty good to that ending.
Well, we'll get to it.
Oh, I have notes.
Why don't we dive in then?
We're diving in with the opening video package and all its 90s VR visual effects. It still looks like crap. And that opening music is just so generic. Like, it just...
I have this terrible feeling that I'm going to come around on it, you know?
Well, we are joined as always by our host, Bob. And Bob is not joined by Dirty Dutch this week. He is joined by James E. Cornette.
Wow, that was quick. Quick turnaround.
And immediately my excitement, like, all right, here we go.
I was also really geeked to see him because it's like, okay, he knows what stories he wants to tell.
He had some whopper commentary lines as well.
Yes, he did.
He was great too. Cornette is, for all of his faults, is a great commentator.
Oh, he's a promo guy for sure.
Yeah.
My goodness.
He even got me interested in watching MLW when he was commentating them. And even NWA, like when he was doing that recently. Like he was a great commentator.
It's weird that as a commentator, and I guess we probably had an idea that he had some influence backstage too, which made it interesting to watch him, but he did draw some eyes.
Yeah, and he can tell a story, and especially in this day and age when so many announcers are not good and just, you know, sound bland and boring. Cornette, say it with all his faults, he always sounds excited to be calling the action. So we kick off with another jobber match to start off the show with Tim Fry.
Lovely brown mullet.
Yeah, oh boy.
I don't know about lovely. That's actually it was pretty nasty.
This guy was very forgivable. And he's facing, well, come out to the fame, Hollywood Bob Holly.
Oh my gosh.
I was so excited because I knew Bob Holly came into Smoky Mountain Wrestling. I had no idea he was right there from the get-go.
That's so exciting because as soon as I saw him, I'm like, oh, thank goodness, someone I recognize. And I'll be honest with you, when I was a kid, I did like hardcore Holly.
Oh, he's awesome.
Just beating the hell out of people. You know?
And by the way, this is early 90s Bob, so he still has that glorious Kentucky waterfall. Like, was that a blonde mullet? Would you call that a blonde mullet?
I don't know if it was blonde. It was brunette.
Okay. Yeah, he was definitely had a mullet, though.
He was going mullet, yeah.
And
was he racing cars at this point?
No, he's from Hollywood. He was a movie star.
Okay.
Yeah, that, you know, they were talking about, like, the, you know, them trying to cast him in movies, like making insinuations about him being, you know, after some casting directors, you know, and it's like, interesting.
Yeah. He strikes me as a real Hollywood guy.
I will say right now, though, his attire does not strike me as a Hollywood guy. He looked like the Lost Heart brother in that getup.
With that pink?
Yes.
That's not bad. Not bad.
So they start going at it, you know, and right away, you notice right away, Bob Holly, everything looks stiff and crisp. He is working. And it's like, yes, this is good Southern wrestling.
It was an upgrade from some of the in-ring action we saw last week.
100%. So, again, say what you want about Bob. He always makes shit look good. Ron Wright rolls his way to the ring again. Just sits there looking very curmudgeon and bitter.
And he shows up out of nowhere every time.
Like, how is this guy sneaking up?
Yeah, really, the sneakiest guy on wheels.
He greases those wheels a lot. No. Both men start working the arm, and then Bob just sort of clocks Tim and starts beating him down. So, quickly establishing that Bob's the heel. Babyface comeback, and goes right to the arm, which, okay, I gotta ask. I see this in all-time matches, especially like these older-style matches. Like, guys go right for the arm and everything like that. It's like, none of you actually have arm submissions. So what are you working the arm for? I can understand the head. You know, you fuck with the head and the neck. Okay. You know, and if, like, the commentator were talking about, like, you know, using the arm, going after the arm to take away the power and everything. But, like, everyone works the arm, and no one has, like, arm submissions.
Yeah, it's almost more, I feel like back in the olden days, it was more of a wear down, like,
right.
Choose a body part, wear it down, or, like, whatever you can get your hands on.
I guess.
But it does take kind of a stretch for that explanation.
To me, when I'm watching it, all I'm seeing is, okay, this is the hold they're using to rest and call the next few spots, and then go into the next sequence of stuff. You know,
it just... That's fair.
Yeah.
I will say that I thought that Tim Fry, like, he was actually impressive for a job guy. He was bumping like crazy, and he actually got the crowd behind him. They were cheering for him.
He did get the crowd behind him quite well. Holly eventually cuts him off. Big old slam. Top rope. And I'm like, okay, what's Holly going to do here? He drops his fucking knees on this dude. What? Like, has Bob Holly ever gone to the top rope in the WWF? Ever?
I'm sure, but I don't remember it.
Like, not like this. This was a Togi Makabe knee drop. Looked beautiful. Drops the straps. And I'm like, if that is not the finish, I'm going to lose it. And no, he does the cocky cover. Pins him 1, 2, 3. It's like, good. Bob Holly. Like, instantly, I'm a Bob Holly fan in Smoky Mountain Wrestling now. Because this was fantastic.
And he was, like you said, he was crisp, but he was... actually surprisingly gentle with this guy. Like, I thought he was going to murder him.
Right.
He's got this reputation. Well,
he's not an asshole yet.
Yeah, he hasn't been flushed out of Hollywood yet.
He hasn't gone back onto the racetracks.
Yeah. Picking up quarters behind the soda machine.
But no, actually, that wasn't until he became hardcore that he became an asshole, apparently.
Okay.
You know, which was the agitator, correct? I think that was...
Yeah.
All right. We go backstage with the Kozlovs, Ivan and Vladimir...
The Koloff.
Whatever. The Russian dudes. Who gives a fuck? Ivan sounds like shit. His Russian accent is horrible. I actually looked. This guy ain't from Russia, by the way. He's Canadian.
Oh, okay.
And Vladimir is from, like, Alabama or something.
Yeah, this guy, you can take one look at him. It's like, there's no way they're letting him talk.
Okay, I gotta ask you one thing. Who did Vladimir look like just standing there? Because he looked like a very distinct person, and I'm going to say it, and it might be like a glass-shattering moment for you.
Okay, well, this is what maybe this is the guy you're thinking of. I said, at the end of the promo, Vlad looks right into the camera and opens his mouth and goes, just like Festus.
No, for me, with the beard and the shaved head and everything like that, he looked like TNA Dustin Rhodes when he was, like, out of shape and, like, the natural...
Okay.
Like, and it's like, I couldn't unsee it after that. Like, that's all I saw afterwards. And yeah, like, they make him look like a blithering idiot, you know? Just like, okay, Russian.
He doesn't look scary, but whatever.
He just stood there looking like a dope. Commercial for Smoky Mountain Wrestling, including clips from show matches tonight, including one, which was the finish to the main event. I was furious.
I was pretty pissed.
It's like, you are showing the finish to your main event on a commercial talking about, I'll bring Smoky Mountain to your town. What the fuck?
This is kind of inexcusable stuff right here.
Inexcusable. Now, granted, they don't show the three count, but it's the finishing spot.
Right, right.
And, oh, my God, I was like, what?
Next, save it 1 week. Begging you.
You had a whole other tape, and you could do a TV VR, a TV VR or whatever the hell.
Didn't they have these commercials VTR last week?
Yes.
Then which, by the same
way,
one.
Yeah, by the way. The last week's show, the end credits showed matches. They were absolutely matches from tonight. So I noticed that. They were different camera shots, but they were the same matches.
Unbelievable.
Rock and Roll Robert Gibson's backstage to tell us nothing important, and just promising that Rock and Roll will never die. Well, given the fact that him and Ricky Morton are still wrestling 30 years later, I can't confirm that Rock and Roll never dies.
That's true. Rock and Roll lives on. He cut a promo that would make Boomhauer proud.
Now I want to see a wrestler cutting promos like Boomhauer, man.
That would be money. That's a great gimmick.
Then we have the Hustler, Rip Rogers. This guy actually would become quite someone in wrestling. He would be a head trainer in OVW and quite well known for being a trainer and very good worker at training people in the future. Just looking into, though, right here in this match, I got white trash P.S. Hayes. With the hair and the beard.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Which, if you're a white trash version of Michael P.S. Hayes, that's bad. Because he's already kind of white trash. Yeah. He's facing Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. The guy who main evented the first ever WrestleMania is here in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Which, by the way, you'll notice right now, Bob Holly, Orndorff, another guy later. This was actually when you would start seeing guys in Smoky Mountain Wrestling that would eventually go on to bigger companies. Bob Holly worked here in Smoky Mountain Wrestling for a short time before going to WWF. And Bill Watts, later on in WCW, would bring Paul Orndorff in because Paul had hurt his arm, everything like that, the famous
story. Yeah, the neck.
Yeah, injury. No, I thought it was his neck.
No. And then pinched a nerve in his neck, and now he's got the arm.
Okay, I thought it was just his arm. I didn't know if it was in his neck, too. But, he'd eventually return from WCW after working some dates in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and Bill Watts got a hold of Jim, hey, I've seen you using Paul. How's he doing? And he'd send him to Bill. So, there you go.
Okay. Yeah, it was interesting to see Paul because when he was noticeably a little bit smaller, but you could tell the difference. His arm had already started to atrophy, especially when he did the elbow drop where he grabs his wrist and both his arms are right together.
Yeah. Start off really high with this match and then go instantly to the floor. They're brawling around that. Orndorff uses the microphone, no DQ, again.
First, also, I just want to mention that Cornette says, Orndorff hates the showbiz approach of the big organizations, and that's why he's in SMW.
Yeah.
Get the hell out of here.
Yeah,
he's got a giant robe.
Yeah, a guy named Mr. Wonderful and looks like that is tired of the show business side of professional wrestling. Get the fuck out of here. Come on. That is not kayfabe believable.
No.
And also, so Paul Orndorff was a vicious heel back in the day. Why is he the babyface? That made no sense to me. And especially with the nickname.
I think it's just because he's a big name and Rip Rogers can't be the babyface.
No, that's true. He was a very boisterous man. Not calling spots, just making noise.
Shut up. And
making noise the entire time. And throws a bunch of...
It's interesting. A lot of the heels, they've definitely got those house show tendencies, where they're yelling at the first row, stuff like that.
Yeah. Nice elbow at the top, and then an elbow to the dick by Paul. No DQ.
What was that?
He straight up dropped an elbow on his dick.
Directly on it.
In front of the referee. Your baby face, ladies and gentlemen. And it's just, again, just no disqualification, nothing.
And this is not an uncommon thing. What was with old moves? The atomic drop and stuff. Things that are directly on the balls, but no, it's not.
It clearly
is.
Okay, the kayfabe argument has always been, you're lifting them up and then you're dropping them, and they're just happening to land on your knee. You're not physically throwing the knee into their balls.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but it's kind of like the idea of, like, this guy sets up a chair, and then he does like a, goes for like a DDT, but like you hold the rope, and he falls on the chair. Oh, it's not DQ because he's just boning himself. It's like, yeah, but you still use the chair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the kayfabe reason, though.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not a fan, especially because so many faces are the ones doing these things.
Yeah. So, I mean, after doing a elbow off the top and an elbow to the dick, Paul works the arm, which... Rogers beautifully, the way he escapes it is raking the bat
single-handedly. Yes! That was awesome.
Loved it. That was amazing. Spot of the night. Like, just that's great. Lazy looking sleeper from Rogers. Look like how you would go up to your buddy from behind and like grab his head, like, "Hey, how you doing, buddy? Good to see you."
Is not that,
a
go ahead.
Not a sleeper to possibly pass out Paul Orndorff.
Was that his finish? Because they were really selling it out.
No, but it's old school wrestling. So, yeah. Of course, the sleeper is the most devastating move because, you know, it's a legit shoot. You could choke someone out with that move.
Yeah.
So, kind of like the pile driver. Like, it, you know, you drop someone on their head, they're going to feel it. Small package by Rogers for a big near... Oh, no, Orndorff, right? He got the small package, right?
Yeah, first one, he escaped the headlock by running him into the turnbuckle.
Yeah, head first. Classic spot. I like that. Mm. Small package, big near fall. Suplex, looks nice, does the running knee, Rogers begs for his life, and a big punch from Orndorff, and he does the wacky, whoa, fall backwards, Andre spot into the ropes.
Oh, my, and it's weird, it's not great when Andre does it, but at least with Andre's weight, he can get that top rope to go back down.
Yeah.
This guy had to force himself to pull the second rope up to try.
Unless you're a 300-plus pounder like Vader or Andre or Yokozuna or some of these big guys, you can't make this spot look good.
No, especially if the ropes are that tight.
Yeah, it didn't look great. And, like, he was in there for 2 seconds. So, sunset flip attempt on Paul, who does the whoa. And successfully does the Bulldog Bret Hart finish from SummerSlam and gets the pin.
I was pretty surprised. I mean, this was a good match, though. But the ref, though, he didn't know what the finish was because he counted 1, 2... Oh, shit, that's the finish. 3.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so good match, though. Paul gets the win. Rip Rogers looks like a decent heel. You could use on television for a little bit here and there, but not more than a mid-carder.
So I thought this might have been the best match we've seen yet.
Might have been, yeah. We have Nitro Danny Davis backstage, formerly known as Nightmare Danny Davis. He's now a babyface with blonde hair, and he warns, just like Nitro, he will explode on you.
Look out.
Look out, folks.
And he makes a point to put over the past. That's something like they are driving home. Like, yeah, man, it used to be great. Wrestling used to be so great.
Yeah. Remember when I was a bad guy? Well, now I'm a Nitro. It's like so 90s.
It's
also funny that he's Nitro Danny Davis before Nitro WCW.
Right.
Interesting, yeah. Substitute teacher Bob Armstrong's backstage, promising a family wrestling show.
Dude's looking just like Sophia from the fucking Golden Girls, the oldest one. With his Coke can glasses.
After you mentioned him, he was like a substitute shop teacher. Can't unsee it. Mr. Armstrong. Oh, my God. Did you hear them say, like, Bob introduces Brian Lee?
We got to touch on what Bob said.
Oh, okay.
Immediately he says, there will be no pile drivers. Come on. Is his job to make this like the most boring promotion possible?
He basically did the same promo he did last week, reinforcing the rules and the fines and no foreign objects and blah, blah, blah. And we're going to run a family wrestling show that you can be proud to show your family members. Okay. It's I'm sorry. I'd be proud to show my family members any wrestling if it's good. Like, just, you know.
Obviously, you don't want an attitude era.
Yeah, this was in 91. Like, this wasn't the attitude era.
Right, right.
You know, I don't know. Okay, did they introduce Brian Lee as Brian Time Brian Lee, it sounded like?
I thought it was Brian, but I'm not
okay,
sure.
Maybe just me mumbled it, but Brian Lee gets a promo. It's a generic promo.
You could tell he has no idea what he's doing because he claps his way in. Like, yeah, claps for himself. Like, I don't know.
In the headlights. Just this... this guy, like, they see potential in this guy. He ain't got it, though. This is a guy you do not put on television right away at all.
This is a guy that I would turn heel immediately, and I would put a manager with him because he cannot cut a promo. He's got a great look.
100%.
Get him in there for 2 minutes and then get him the hell out of there.
Yeah. We go to the ring with Scott Armstrong, legitimate son of Bob Armstrong and a member of the Armstrong family.
That's looking good.
Yeah. But that hair.
That's not looking good.
No. Even in 91, that looked bad. And he's facing rolling, keep them doggies rolling, feed them ride. Massive pop for me. I love that song.
That's pretty cool.
Dirty Dutch Mantel, looking like a fucking conquistador. What was he wearing?
And then to top it off, he takes off his entrance gear. He looks like fucking Snow White's eighth dwarf.
Harry. Okay, Dutch is a hairy man from the neck up with the beard and the long hair, big old eyebrows. He looks like Robin Williams' brother. Just the hair on this man.
Insane. It is insane. Like, one of his parents is a Brillo pad.
The other one's a Bigfoot. I would hate to wrestle a man that is that hairy.
I know, because you know, like, after the match, you're going to have, stuck to your sweat, his body hairs, chest pubes and stuff.
I imagine touching him is just disgusting. It's like touching a sponge. Okay. Match starts off fairly even. Dutch goes to he's getting, like, an arm lock, goes to grab the rope, and the ref kicks the hand. What the fuck?
He's got a rope break and he's kicking his hand off.
This wasn't like Dutch was cheating. He just grabbed the rope to break the hole. The ref's like, ah, fuck that, and kicks his hand away. What? Did the referee forget the spot?
I think because later in the match, right, they do the
abdominal stretch.
And I think that might have been what the spot was supposed to be.
Dude, yeah. With all the stories I heard of Dutch Mantel, I'm surprised Dutch had just clocked the ref right there. Because, like, you know, you made the ref look like, you made Dutch look like a bitch.
And you made the whole, like, the ref look like a cheating heel.
Yeah.
Weird.
By the way, Cornette was on point here with his comments. Because, so, right away, they established that Cornette doesn't like Bob Armstrong. He doesn't like his family. Including the comment, Bob used to walk Scott to grade school, which came in handy because they both went to the same class.
Which is a good one.
Good. There's a lot of Cornette ones in here. Dutch eventually gets the abdominal stretch, grabs the rope, classic heel move. It's just amazing because the referee sees the rope wiggling and just, like, can't figure it out. It's like, come on. Like, referees are morons. Dutch would have, like, punches Scott and goes, like, tumbling to the floor. Looked great.
Looked good.
Like, that was awesome. Dutch gets frustrated after a certain point and just grabs the whip and whacks him with it. Immediate DQ. And then he starts to whip him with the bull rope. But the bull rope, is a legit bull rope. And you could hurt someone bad with those things.
Oh, certainly.
And he, like, whacks it. Like, it's hitting the ring. It's not making the crack. So it's making the thunk. Didn't look that great, I think.
No, I you could tell he was protecting the guy. Right. But it was fine.
It was fine.
Did you notice prior to the finish, Scott Armstrong's little flutter kick where he, like, jumps up and, like, flutters his feet and then kicks him? And oh, my God. It was so funny.
Yeah. Brian Lee runs out to save Scott Armstrong from the Dirty Dutchman.
Yeah, he comes out with a curtain rod.
With a stick. It was a fucking stick.
Yeah, where did you get? I swear, it's a curtain rod. Where did he get it?
What was it? It's like, you know, you want to talk about guys nowadays come out with kendo sticks. Like, at least that, I'm like, okay, it's a weapon. Like, this was your ma's curtain rod.
Yeah.
The shower curtain from backstage that was the makes the yeah. curtain to the back.
One of the boys back there showering with no curtain on.
Also, by the way, he hit the ring like 2 seconds after Dutch started whacking him, which is like, okay, so this guy was like watching from the back, right?
Yeah, you're right, because he was right on top of it.
He was right on top of it. The principal of the Morristown High School is here to talk about a recent show that Smoky Mountain Wrestling did and how great it was and how it helped out their local sports teams to raise money. The show didn't take place. And they didn't run Morristown until June of this year. So this principal is a fucking liar.
What? That is so ridiculous.
Yeah, I did my research because I'm like, wait a minute. This is the second show they've ever done. Like, you want to tell me that they've already ran a house show in Morristown, Tennessee? He's like, no. And by the way, this guy looked like a principal.
Oh, he was.
Like, I believe this was a shoot principal.
Me too. I think he was Bob Armstrong's boss.
Speaking of substitute teacher Bob, he comes in and he legitimately is questioning whether a bull rope is a foreign object.
First thing is he comes in and he's wearing last week's fucking shirt. So this is clearly from last week.
You're right.
Either that or the principal was like, you got to get back to shop class, dude.
Okay, your 30-minute break is over. Yeah, so like he's questioning, like he's like, well, you know, Dutch walks down. That's part of his attire, and he walks down there as part of his, you know, his entrance attire. I question whether it's a foreign weapon. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's a fucking bull rope. Of course it's a weapon.
And he says, but if he uses it the first time, it'll be a $500 fine. It's like, he literally just used it for the first time.
On your son. Anyway, he books Brian versus Dutch for next week. So maybe Dutch can get something out of prime time. Cornette calls Bob Commissioner Gordon as he's, which I got to pop out of that.
That's good.
That's a good one. And this is much like Cornette's promo last week, hyping up his new team and talks about in the other promotions, you can't get a push because someone else has a bubblegum deal, a shoe deal, and is going to be on a sitcom. These were legitimate things that he thinks that wrestlers were doing in 1990. Has a wrestler ever had a bubblegum deal?
Maybe Hogan, maybe it's like, because Macho ended up with the Slim Jim thing. Yeah. I don't know when that was, but I'm sure that somebody had some relation to, but God forbid that wrestlers get over, you know, and like make some money.
Did anyone have a shoe deal? Did any wrestlers ever have a shoe deal?
I can't even, what would that shoe look like? A wrestling boot with lifts or something?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe nowadays, where like a lot of guys wrestle on sneakers, would be more ideal, but
make
like
more sense, yeah.
And like sitcoms, okay, but like this was Cornette, you know, bashing the company for being too big league and Hollywoodized,
mainstream.
Yeah, exactly. Universal Wrestling Federation's Wally Yamamoto, or yeah, is that Yamamoto?
I didn't name
Yamaguchi. Yamaguchi, whatever. This lad talking about how he's here scouting talent for Japan and how they might have wrestler from Smoky Mountain in Japan. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, and he was very cautious and made sure that we might have.
Also, the most well-spoken Japanese man in wrestling.
Except, yeah, but probably the worst dressed.
Yes.
Pink polo, popped collar under a sports jacket.
And then some other lad there for no reason.
He introduces us to his boy.
Yes.
His young boy. This is my boy.
No, it's the boy in his stable.
There you go.
Okay, do you know who this man is?
I assumed he was some sort of a producer.
He was legitimately a wrestler from another company, but he would become well known in the Attitude Era for being Kai and Tai's manager.
What?
This is the I choppy choppy your peepee guy.
Oh my god!
In 91. just the idea of Smoky Mountain Wrestling sending guys to Japan or bringing Japanese wrestlers to the hills of Tennessee. Yeah, that will go over well. Let me pause right here. Because let's go on a little bit of a tangent here. Because later in the show, they mentioned Japan as well. And it's like, okay, in today's wrestling, Cornette likes to take shots at like, why would people care about people from Japan, blah, 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 blah. In mainstream wrestling, he's taking those shots at like AEW or WWE or New Japan Pro Wrestling or whatever. About how, why would the average person in America in 2020 like Japanese wrestling? Meanwhile, he has guys from Japan in the hills of Tennessee in 1990, and he's expecting people to give a shit.
On episode 2.
Nothing's been
established. We don't know any of these
people. And this isn't like he's bringing in the giant Baba from All Japan Pro Wrestling. This is a nobody.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of this fucking guy. So, right there, Cornette, you know, I'm calling you a hypocrite.
Yeah, because, I agree there.
So, recap of last week's main event, literally showing like almost the entire finish of the main event. So, yikes. Cornette laughing at Jackie getting hung by saying he should have been hanged.
That's the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life.
That was great. They re-show the promo from last week where Bob finds him, and then the Foldens cut their bland babyface promo where Jackie stares at the camera still, and it's still a shit promo.
Oh, man. It was worse the second time around.
Yeah. Ron Wright comments on the allegations that he would help Ivan Koloff. I had it right the first time. Yeah. I'm going to get it right eventually. By the time I get it right, it'll be gone. Ivan Koloff is, he helped him, saying that Ron Wright is innocent. He literally speaks in the third person for most of his promo.
Mm-hmm.
He's an innocent man. And that Ron Wright is a crippled man in a wheelchair. He literally calls himself a crippled old man.
Yeah. Never, and he said he'd never harm a herb.
Yeah, which, okay, like, now, again, this is apparently more funny if you know Ron White, right? He was, like, a vicious, like, famous for Tennessee chain matches back in the day of, like, the old Tennessee territory. So, like, this is what the humor is. Like, this guy who was a violent, vicious heel is, I would never hurt a hair on a man's hair.
Okay.
So, there you go.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it is good. The Koloffs are in the ring now. Ivan just looks like shit. I'm sorry. Why would you book this guy? I don't understand it.
I mean, he must have some name value left to draw some people, man, he cannot move. He is stiff as a board.
Yeah. Here come the Sharp Dressed Men. The Fantastics hit the ring and immediately jump started.
Yeah, they jumped him, still wearing their magician's assistant's jacket.
Yes.
Dressed like Anna Jay.
And they try to get the USA chant started. 10 people join in.
That was amazing. That was my favorite spot where Bobby Fulton tries to get a USA chant started and fails. Like, that is some pathetic baby face.
Right. He was over last week, and now the crowd does not care.
No, they don't even care about the USA at this point.
Weird, like, they go back and forth. They're working over Ivan. Weird monkey flip into a pin looked like a tumbling routine. It did not look smooth at all. Ivan ain't taking that fucking bump.
Oh, no.
He would break his hip. He didn't look like Ron Wright. Ivan just can't bump or sell at all. Like, he just bumps and sells like shit.
He won't even sell a punch.
No, he just stands
like, nope, not moving for that.
Yeah. Dumbass Jackie Fulton distracts the referee, allowing Vladimir to get in and interfere and attack his brother. So, way to go.
That's like the story of this match, is the one of the Fantastics getting distracted.
No. Distracting the ref.
Yep.
Super weak ghetto blaster by Bobby, the classic, was it Bad News Brown?
Is that what that was? I thought that was just a dog shit dropkick.
It looked terrible.
Horrible.
It looked bad. Vladimir whips him into the corner, he's working him over, whips one of the Foldens into the corner, and, like, gets lost, because, like, Bobby weirdly bounces out and then, like, starts rolling to the outside. Vlad starts to go after him, but, like, backs away, and then Ivan comes in and starts working him over. It's like, he got lost. He looked lost, like a babe in the woods. Sunset flip onto Vlad. No, so, of course, it's successful. And it's actually a successful pin, but Jackie distracts the referee again. He costs his team the match right here. Cole tagged Jackie. He runs wild, passes for running wild. Actually, a really nice finish, though. They're chaos in the ring, blah, 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 blah. Crossbody to Ivan as Bobby fights Vlad on the outside. 1, 2, 3. There's the finish.
It was a good finish, but I had to rewind it because there was so much going on. Right. I didn't realize. I was paying attention to Bobby.
Okay, also, I'm sorry. I cannot fucking tell the difference between Bobby and Jackie.
Bobby is more short and stout. That's the only way I can tell.
Okay.
But still, at a lot of times, I cannot tell them.
No. Like, I have that problem with the Usos and with the Briscoe brothers from ROH for a long time. Like, they look too similar. Change up their attire or something like that. You know, whatever. Bob and Cornette are talking on a backstage. Cornette does not want to go to redneck towns.
And did you notice that Jim Cornette is also in a different suit?
I don't know. And then we get the debut of Bam Bam Terry Gordy.
Oh, shit. I was so happy to see Terry Gordy.
Dude, this was how you do a nonsensical promo, But it was awesome.
It was great.
It was
Freebird Mountain. He said it just over and over. I came from Freebird Mountain.
I came from Freebird down, all the way down to the Smoky Mountain. I'm going to go back to Freebird Mountain to come, and I'm going to come back down here and cause some trouble. I'm going to get down here, but like, kneeling down like I'm calling, like going hunting. It made no sense. It was amazing.
Oh, it was great. Shouty, awesome.
Oh, it was awesome. And then from the penthouse to the outhouse.
God, okay.
Here's Tim Horner.
I was pretty devastated by this. I put over Tim Horner last week pretty good. And this was, what a horrendous promo.
He could not talk. He's like, you know, back in those other companies, you got guys that do that bodybuilding stuff. This is literally how he talked, by the way, folks. That bodybuilding stuff and that.
He was like body, what is it? He had to ask Bob.
How did this promo make television? How?
Start it over. And the best part is like, he didn't know how to wrap it up and he's like, I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah.
I was fucking happy to be here, Tim Horner.
Did this go over your head though? They mentioned he is back from a tour of Japan. Okay, Luke, trivia time. Did Tim Horner ever wrestle in Japan?
I think that he went over there and took a tour.
like a tour
of sites. And came back and called it that.
Tim Horner did wrestle in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
What?
Yes, this was back at the time when New Japan was still like the solid.
Win a title.
He was the number two. He was like the solidly like the number two because this is when, like, during the time when All Japan and Giant Baba like ruled Japanese wrestling.
Oh, okay.
So, but he did wrestle Keiji Muto.
Get out of here.
No.
I have to see. We have to watch this.
We're gonna
have to watch this.
We'll add it into next week's review.
Yeah, we'll squeeze it in.
Yes, he wrestled the Great Muta in Japan. To be fair, it was like one of those like tag league tournaments or whatever. And so like he was just brought in like as a job guy. Like he won a few matches.
Was it a one-on-one match?
Yes, it was a one-on-one match.
Okay, well, yeah, we're watching
but
this.
But to be fair, like we've also seen like other terrible matches. Like New Japan Wrestling had El Gigante and what was that guy? The prisoner.
Nails
wrestle one time. So is that surprising?
Yeah, it's not like okay. Tim Horton, once he gets in between them ropes, baby, he's got the goods. I think he's gonna give Muta a fucking run for his money.
Okay, I will look up this match and we'll find it.
Yes,
but anyway, this was like, why was this the end of the show?
No, main event.
The main event was actually decently. But like this promo was a wet fart of an ending.
It was like a dad that just got up the courage to talk at the PTA meeting or something. It was terrible.
It was terrible. Awful promo. And like Bob could not sign out faster. And we're done for the night. Just what a ride.
It was a rough finish. But I will say that this was a marked step up from last week. We
100%.
They addressed some of our complaints about the job guys.
Yes.
So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Cornette is obviously
back from 30 years ago. They fixed it just for us.
Yeah, they heard what we said and went back. They listened to the fans. You know?
Right.
But I think that Cornette is an improvement on commentary as well.
I don't know. He doesn't do it much. I think he does it for the first few shows. I don't know who is the commentator going forward. I know at one point they do have Jim Ross. For sure.
Oh, okay.
So
look forward to that.
I look forward to that too.
But yeah, it's weird because it's almost like you said earlier, why was this not show number one or at least some of these matches on the first show?
Right. Like I understand that you can't do the Fantastics and the Russians in the main event for the first. Okay, fine. But like why wasn't the rest of this? Like rest of the stuff was good. Paul Orndorff in your first show would have been big.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Holly, you know, he's not in anyone, but like, you know, that'd been fine. You know, he's, I don't know. I especially because like they taped this all in one day. It was all filmed at the Bobby Fulton the wrestling show that they did this at. Like, why wasn't this restructured to have certain matches go on first? Like your first main event of Smoky Mountain Wrestling ever ended in a disqualification. Like, that's what you want your first TV main event to be in the history books?
And you're trying to set yourself apart from all the rest of the wrestling promotions, which that's what they did. Nobody lost in that time. In the 80s and early 90s, nobody lost.
Yeah. So a big step up, still some issues and some real gems for comedy's sake and just for entertainment's sake.
The problem is like the show from last week, at least they gave us like, oh, there's a hot angle. I kind of want to, I'll tune in. But this time it's like Brian Lee versus Dutch. that's not enough for me. I don't think, just
based on like what Dutch did in the ring, I like Dutch, but I don't think he's a great wrestler. And what Brian Lee has brought to the table so far, like, I was like, I'm not excited for that.
And I don't think at this point in his career that Dutch is like this main event heel.
When was Dutch? Like I know he was big in Puerto Rico, but like, was he ever big like any other territories?
I haven't really seen enough of his stuff to say.
Right. Like, he's just one of those guys you always hear about, but I never actually like see. I know him more for his manager and agent work more than his wrestling.
Same here.
And also he was a booker too, I believe, at some point.
Yeah, he was on the booking team in TNA and
right, but I think also like in the territories, I think too, as a booker. So, well, you know, but like I said, I Dutch to pass because he came out to Rawhide. So
he's all right in our book.
He's all right. You know, you come out to that. Although it wasn't the Blues Brothers wasn't out yet. So darn. Okay. All right, Luke, send us home.
And that'll do it for another episode of On Top of Old Smokey. From myself, Lukey, and my friend Alex Khalil, thank you for listening. And remember that it's never a bad time to shut up.